Thank you, Jane. This ain't my first rodeo. John Wayne, 1950-something. Kind of like John Wayne, this also is not my first rodeo. I've had a variety of opportunities to make presentations similar to this, although after you hear this, you may wonder why. A little bit unlike John Wayne, who rode the same horse out of town that he rode in, the presentation I brought here has been changed 4 times as I set through a variety of biofuel sessions. So if it looks a little bit random, there's a reason why. To meet the water transpiration demands of the 2005 1 billion ton report would require 456 cubic kilometers of water, roughly equal to the volume of water found in Lake Erie, or roughly 3 times more water than falls on all the cropland in Iowa annually. That statement came yesterday. I think it was Jeff, is it Volanek from Illinois? So the question remains, or is, do we have the kind of water to do what we need to do? Is it luxury, or maybe it's just plain foolish? Sorry. So I want to spend a little bit of time. I reorganized this thing. We got some water presentations after this. I'm going to go through why this is critical, why it's important. Then we're going to talk some about difference in water footprints of different potential biofuel crops. Starting real simple, all living organisms require water. Kind of a no-brainer. Water is a conditionally finite resource. Through the hydrologic cycle, water is always moving, yet we are extracting water from aquifers that are not being replenished. It is conditionally finite. From the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment Report, during the next 50 years, demand for food crops is projected to grow immensely, and demand for water also. And understand, these projections were made before the IPCC report came out indicating elevated temperatures globally. Elevated temperatures increase demand for water. 40% of the world's food and feed comes from only 18% of the world's croplands. These are irrigated croplands. Why is that important? Croplands, obviously, give us a high production level, but one thing we don't hear much about or think about is the stability associated with irrigation. With the increasingly narrow margins of feed and food stocks to use, the stability is increasingly important. Irrigation occurs dominantly in water deficit regions, in other words, regions in which water replenishment to the aquifers we are mining does not occur. Jared Diamond made a point in his book, Collapse. It says, no civilization that's relied upon irrigation has ever survived. Our current civilization is heavily, heavily dependent upon irrigation. Fisher published in 2002 a map showing the terrain suitability index for rain-fed crops. Now, this is a map of the globe, color-coded. Greens indicate that the soil and rainfall are appropriate for rain-fed crop and pastures. As we move to less favorable colors, those of the red, orange, and light gray indicates totally unsuitable areas. The red's more marginally suited. I'd like you to focus on that area. That area is a pretty highly productive area right now, or as it was in 2000, 2002. The next slide I'll show you is going to come from the IPCC report. And it's a report on projected rainfall patterns towards the end of this century. And we're going to focus that area where that red circle occurs right now. Again, another color-coded map. The map on the right side is the projected rainfall in the period June, July, and August compared to current rainfall conditions. The oranges depict a predicted deficit or reduced precipitation of in excess of 20% in those months compared to what currently exists. This is that rain-fed, highly productive area that I had mentioned in the previous slide. The stipples or the dark points are the areas in which the suite of 23 models used in the IPCC report had basically uniform agreement about what's going to happen. Doesn't prove it's going to happen, but I think it's evidence that we can't ignore. Also from the IPCC report, a table or a graph showing changes in temperatures in degrees by decade from 1976 to 2000. What do we see happening in that same area? The vice chair of the IPCC report gave a presentation in the National Council for Science and Environment annual meeting, 2005. His statement was, if we do not change our greenhouse gas emissions from what we're currently doing, the weather conditions, the heat we experienced in Europe in the year, I think it was 2003, in which roughly 30,000 people died, he said, will be the norm by 2030. What does that tell us about water use? What does that tell us about food production? What does that tell us about potential biofuel production? Looking at crop production, and biofuel crop feedstocks are part of crop production, our irrigation water resources are being stressed. They are being depleted. Rain-fed agriculture areas, based on projections from models such as what was used in the IPCC, suggest that that also is going to be stressed. Water demand is going to continue to grow. The agricultural demand for water is going to grow. We currently have a demand. What do we do with that demand? I'm talking about food and feed. We create a supply to meet that demand. As we move into the biofuels arena, and this is not a pushback on biofuels, it's not a pushback, we increase the demand. The question becomes, from where will the supply originate? Where will the supply originate, and what impact will it have on our water resources? So we consider water use in liquid biofuels. There are two major places or areas in which biofuels are used. One is in the biomass production, which is the dominant one, production growth of the feedstock. The other is conversion process, use of processing water, cooling water, and service water. Service water that's used to keep people and humans comfortable inside the plant. We're going to focus on biomass production. The definition for water footprint is this, the one we're going to use, the total annual volume of fresh water used to produce goods and services for consumption. At present, agriculture production of biomass for food and fiber account for roughly 86% of the worldwide fresh water use. Depending upon which author you read and the data and the way they collected it, that can be as low as about 70%. Irregardless, it is the dominant use of fresh water worldwide. Another term we're going to use is water consumptive use, and that's the sum total of water input less water output that is recycled and reused for the process. Fact number one, consumptive water use is similar for all feedstocks. If you believe that, I've got a bridge laying in the bottom of the Mississippi River in Minneapolis that I'll sell you. It's not true. So we're going to look at water consumption for, in particular, three crop or crop rotations that could be considered our likely biofuel feedstocks in this country. We're going to look at the net water consumed estimates, and a major factor is for differences or before the ranges that we're going to observe. The fuel feedstock we're going to consider is corn ethanol, switchgrass for ethanol, and then gasoline in various forms, although we're not going to talk much about the gasoline component. The net water consumed for corn ethanol, this is the starch-based ethanol, ranges from 10 to 324. That's ratio of water to ethanol output. Switchgrass ethanol is 1.9 to 9.8, And if you want to make a comparison for gas, you see it there. Why the ranges? Well, for corn ethanol, there's regional variation caused by irrigation requirements. Variation caused by irrigation requirements due to climate and soil type. Switchgrass, the assumption was made that water irrigation was not used for switchgrass production, so the variation that you see there is attributed primarily to the technology used to make the conversion. Gasoline technology. So we consider biofuel feedstocks and water consumption. There are differences. There are differences between species, between regions, and between processing methods. The concern is irrigation. The concern is irrigation not only for me. From the National Academy of Sciences, this statement was lifted. Growing biofuel crops in areas requiring additional irrigation water from already depleted aquifers is a major concern. This morning, in a talk by Thomas Trout, he made this statement, and this won't be an exact quote, but he said, bioenergy crops and irrigation do not mix. He's from Colorado. So where will these materials be grown? Where will they be grown? Well, let's look more, let's take a look at the international scene. And let's compare some bioenergy potential feedstocks in terms of water use. This is the water footprint. For crops that are currently grown, that could be and some are being grown for biofuels. On this table, we've got cubic meters of water per gigajoule of electricity. I think a gigajoule is approximately equal to what we find in a barrel of petroleum. We have the green water footprint, which is rainwater. We have that coming from irrigation water, and then the total. First two, sugar beet and maize, have a combination of both blue and green, irrigation and rain-fed. Sugar cane, barley, and wheat. You notice that our footprint is increasing. Continue to use irrigation water. Potato, soybean, sorghum, and rapeseed. We see some pretty hefty water footprints associated with these. Now you ask the question, or I hear, we hear, even in that previous statement on the previous slide, that we should not be producing biofuels with irrigation water. I think that statement's only partly true. It doesn't make any difference to me if we're growing corn grain for bioethanol, if it's produced in Iowa, if it's produced in Nebraska, produced in Colorado or Kansas using irrigation water. Because we have an international market, we have a supply to meet the international demand. If we remove part of that supply to meet biofuel feedstocks or bioenergy, it raises the commodity price. With commodity price increase, what happens to production of that given commodity? It goes up. We can now afford to grow it in places where otherwise we could not. From Illinois, and this simply illustrates differences in water estimated ET for three crops that, again, could be likely used, potentially used for biofuel feedstocks, macanthus, switchgrass, and corn-soybean rotation. And let's just look at this 206 to 208 average. Amount of rain, PET, but this one right here. Estimated ET, 368 for miscanthus, 248 for switchgrass, 264 for corn. So that means miscanthus uses a lot more water. Well, it uses more water for one reason, and this was also explained yesterday. Miscanthus uses more water. It's a C4 plant, same as corn. Uses more water than corn or switchgrass because it stays green or gets green earlier and stays green longer, more actively photosynthesizing. And one of these next slides, I'll indicate and this has been said multiple times, I removed it from my slide set. Photosynthesis is linearly related to transpiration. For a given crop, photosynthesis is linearly related to transpiration. Biomass accumulation is linearly related to water use. I'm going to close up with two slides. One just some tidbits related to water footprint. Some of those that I removed because I've heard others make that statement multiple times prior to me. One is, I'll repeat what I just said, biomass yield is linearly related to transpiration. There is no free lunch. However, management practices, particularly those that reduce evaporation from the soil surface, has the potential to improve water use efficiency 25 to 40%. Different crops have different biomass yields versus transpiration loss. C3 versus C4 species are the biggest difference we observe. Marketplaces of poor management for natural resources. Water is a natural resource. I'll expound on that a little bit more in the conclusion slide. Water footprint does not need to be a showstopper relative to biofuel. We need to use intelligence, and part of that intelligence is this. It is unnecessary to drive the military vehicle to go get groceries. That's a statement from Bill McKibben. The best way to reduce water footprint of biofuel crops is to reduce the demand. Conclusions. First, there are none. So I'm more likely going to say some concluding thoughts. Marginal rain-fed lands used for biofuel feedstocks could be a win-win situation. You've never heard that before, have you? Rain-fed may be the new point here. Irrigated crops, not only regions, should be morally avoided because of the world marketplace in terms of use for bioenergy production. Added value associations with food feed crops is a potential winner, and I'll use corn, although I'm not a strong proponent of corn, but using the biomass portion of corn already being grown, could be a winner in terms of eliminating additional water use. And finally, stay tuned. I'm concerned this issue is really going to grow. It's going to grow because of climate variations that we're unsure of. It's going to grow because of a population increase that we are sure of. And it's going to grow because of the energy demand and supply that also is going to grow, at least the demand component. Thank you.